Welcome to Does the Team Think with Ted Ray, Arthur Askey, Leslie Crowther, and the man who has stopped the idea, Professor Jimmy Edwards.
All right, team. Facing you now is the handsome figure of Mr. J.H. Stone. Mr. Stone, welcome to the program. What's your question?
If the team had to arrange a package holiday for their worst enemy, how would they go about it?
If the team had to arrange a package holiday for their worst enemy, how would they go about it?
That's a good question.
Now answer it.
I'd find a plane with outside toilets.
Leslie Crowther.
Is it my go now?
Yes, it is.
I certainly wouldn't bother about sending anybody abroad. I'd book my worst enemy into some theatrical digs I once had in Glasgow. Oh, God, they were terrible. Her name was Mrs. MacDonald, this woman. It's
watch
true.
It, watch it.
Mrs. MacDonald, well, she had bad feet, so it could have been MacDonald Hobley.
Isn't that
very
and, she's like that, you know. I mean, she talked like that the whole time, Mr. Crowther. She talked through her nose.
Well, she had to. Her mouth was worn out.
And it was so filthy. The digs were so filthy that under the bed there was so much dust, the mice were walking about on stilts.
I don't know how we've got on to theatrical digs. It's nothing to do with the question.
No, it's
at
a
all.
Package
That's
holiday.
Right.
But if you're talking about filthy digs, I once stayed in digs on my honeymoon too, in Angel Road, Brixton, and the first night, can you imagine this? There were bugs in the bed and up the wall. Mm. And I hadn't got the courage to tell the landlady, so what I did, I went out the following morning down to the post office in Brixton Road and sent myself a telegram saying, come home at once, father ill. And I showed the woman the telegram. She said, OK, you can go, but you've got to pay me for the week. And I did, which just shows what a lily-livered, covered coward I am. Anyway,
Jimmy
it's
Edwards.
Not a package deal.
Jimmy Edwards.
Well, I was going to say the same as you, Ted. We're talking about package holidays.
Yes.
So that all those things like the mice on stilts and all those other old jokes...
Nothing to do with it.
...have to be included in the package. But if you start the package off as I would send this worst enemy of mine. First of all, you've got to start off with... You've got to have 140 other people with you in this package. And they've all got to have halitosis and bad legs. And they get
That's
on a bus which, and the tyres go down.
I shouldn't mention halitosis. I wouldn't breathe that to anybody.
Then they get to an airport where there's only one immigration officer and 400,000 people have just arrived.
Yeah.
And then they get a voice of something like, yeah. And they realise that it's been postponed for 4 hours. Stop this.
Go on, Jim.
And then they get on the aeroplane and they taxi out to the takeoff point and there's fog, so they go back again.
Yes.
Eventually it takes off and the loo doesn't work. I'll arrange all that. And they've run out of gin. That's the most startling thing. The bar is empty. They run out of gin. Then they're stacked over the airport of destination for 4 hours. And when they land, the passport is invalid and they have to come back again. That's the end of my package deal is that he finally comes to this villa and finds he's got to share it with somebody who's learning the clarinet. That's all.
These holidays really are becoming too cheap.
Too cheap?
I think so. I think they're becoming ridiculous. And people can't expect to go away without paying a decent amount of money. I was passing a travel agency the other day and looking for a place to send Sybil, like St. Helena.
Elba.
Elba?
That's where they sent the other fellow.
Oh, yes, well. Yes. Anyway, I thought Elba was in Greece.
No.
You've heard of Elba, Greece?
It's Elba, Greece.
And I saw in the window, it said, come to sunny Ostend for 4 days, £6 or £7. And I was rather intrigued by this. And I went inside and I said to the fellow that was standing behind the counter, excuse me, but this holiday at Ostend, he said, you're interested? I said, no, I'm curious, really. £6 or £7? Can't you make up your mind whether it's six or seven? He said, well, it all depends how many are rowing.
Thank you, team. Thank you, Mr. Stone. Thank you very much.
Well done.
And now you're going to hear a question from Mr. R.H. Garner. Mr. Garner, what's your question, please?
If the team woke up one morning on a park bench with nothing but a £5 note,
How would they make a living?
If the team woke up one morning on a park bench with nothing but a £5 note, how would they make a living?
Do you mean £5 between the lot of us, Mr. Garner, or £5 each?
£5 each, but on £5 different each. Benches.
Well, but with my £5, I'll tell you what I'd do. I'd take the £5 note, I'd fold it in two, I'd fold it in four, I'd fold it in 16, and so on. Then I'd open it up, and I'd find my £5 increases. That joke is free for pantomime.
Thank you,
Joe Miller.
Whatever you want.
You can't.
Just a moment, Leslie, may I just interpolate here? Sir, Mr. Garner, I've noticed that you are wearing exactly the same suit that I am. Would you mind standing up, please?
It's on the park bench, you see.
Would you mind standing up?
And the same tie.
He's wearing the same suit. No. Now, where did you get your suit?
The jumble.
The jumble. I paid £85.
You were robbed,
Ted. Did you really get it from the jumble?
Yes.
What is the name in the inside pocket? Would you look? They usually...
Garner. Fred Jumble.
He got it from Garner.
Ted Ray here.
Ted Ray. And I pay £85.
Ted Ray, would you sit down and take the clothes hanger out of your shoulders?
You insist.
Ooh, look at this, Ted.
I must say.
Back to the question, team.
No, we're having these...
Jumble.
We're having all these visual jokes here. We are... You must remember, chaps, we are on the radio, and the lucky, lucky people at home can't see all this disporting and taking our clothes off.
You were on the radio last night.
Was I
when doing? You're drunk, you'll sleep anywhere.
Which brings me to my reply to this question. This is not such an unusual occurrence for me to wake up on a park bench.
I've seen you.
But I've never woken up on a park bench with nothing on but a £5 note.
Where would you wear it,
says,
Jim?
Doesn't it? I'd need a £10 note myself.
He always was the boastful type. Not true at all.
Leslie Crowther.
Well, it wouldn't get you anywhere a fiver, would it? I mean, ridiculous. I mean, the cost of living's risen so much that even the people who don't intend to pay aren't buying anything. A friend of mine, lady, tried to economise, and she went into a very big grocer's in Piccadilly. She said, I'd like to buy half a cauliflower because I'm economising, and the assistant said, well, we don't sell half a cauliflower. She said, look, I've shopped here for 20 years, and I shall take my account elsewhere. He said, all right, don't worry, I'll try and sort it out. So he went to see the manager, and the lady followed him, unbeknown to the assistant. And the assistant said to the manager, says, some stupid old cow wants to buy half a cauliflower. Turned round, saw her standing there, and said, oh, and this lady would like to buy the other half.
Thank you, Leslie Crowther.
Yes.
I would dearly like the team to turn their attention to the gist and pith of this question.
Ah, yes.
What?
They were a very good act. Gist and pith. Did you ever say
that? The gist and pith of this question is really quite good, this gentleman. No, he doesn't look much. He's got a bit of brain under that bald head.
Ah, it's a suit that does it.
I mean, what he really means is we're starting off with nothing, with £5. How would we earn a living, isn't
right,
it?
That's right.
Well, I mean, my answer to that is quite simple. I would go and buy a cheap musical instrument, probably a cornet or something. And I would play. I mean, I'm not going to bum on people. I'm not going to beg. I'm going to provide entertainment at the street curb level. And I would play the
tune. You've been doing that for years.
I would play... that, Mr. Crowther?
Have you noticed that Jim's cornet is slightly flattened because he once caught it in a pub doorway?
No, it wasn't the cornet I caught in the pub doorway.
Bad luck.
It was my foot.
If I had a fiver, the first thought would be, I thought, well, this is the end. I'd buy all my mates here a drink.
I'll tell you what I'd
do. I would. I'd say to Jimmy, will you have a drink? He said, I'll just have a mouthful. And I'd say, no, you'll have a gallon like everybody else.
And I would save that fiver and I'd give £4.50 of it to Ted so he can buy some better jokes.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Mr. Garner. Thank you very much. And now, team, you face, and aren't you lucky, Miss Fiona Page. Miss Fiona Page.
Do the team like dancing, and have they ever taken lessons?
Do the team like dancing, and have they ever taken lessons?
Well, it's very popular, of course, dancing. A policeman I know was motoring down the road once, and he saw three cars in a lay-by, and he stopped, and he shone his torch in the first car, and there were two couples at it like knives, you see. So he said to them, what do you think you're doing, and all that. She said, it's all right. She said, my friend's teaching me to foxtrot. So he said, oh, that's all right. So he goes to the next car and shines his torch, and the same, another couple, you know, all raving they were. And he said, what's going on here then? And she said, it's all right, my boyfriend's teaching me to quick step. So he goes to the third car. Good joke, this. And he peers into the car and he says, I suppose you're doing the boss an over. She said, no, I'm doing the boss a favour.
Rubbish, get off! Get off! And what is more, we let him get through that gag without
interruption. I would like to have said, halfway through that joke, why do you what this expression, at it like knives, means. You use his expression so readily, I've never seen knives doing anything. Now then, Mrs. Page.
Miss Page.
Miss Page, of course. She's just been turned over.
I tell you what, talking about dancing...
I haven't woken up with a £5 note on me yet.
You're not lying to
me. Arthur Askey.
I used to dance with Sabrina. You remember Sabrina?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, when I danced with her, not only couldn't I see where I was going, I couldn't hear the band.
Miss Fiona Page, are you anything at all to do with the dancing fraternity?
Yes, I teach modern jazz.
Modern jazz? What, modern jazz? Modern jazz dancing? Or do you mean tap and all that sort of bit?
Modern jazz and tap.
Modern jazz and tap. How would you get on, do you think, teaching some of these gentlemen? What would you teach them?
Well, first of all, I'd get them all at the bar. Get all their.
Get them all at the bar.
You'd have a great struggle with Jimmy.
It's a barn dance, is it?
No, it's a bar she's talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You know, you stick your leg up there and then wonder where it's gone.
Can you imagine me trying to get my legs up on the bar?
There is a little bar.
You'd have to wish. Oh, I see.
There's a big one and a little one.
Children under eight. I'd be all right.
Carry on, Fiona.
Then I get him to do some pliés and some kicks.
You'd get Jimmy to do a plié, did you say? That I would have to see.
I'd rather have a press-up.
Miss Page, have you any other advice for these gentlemen if they decided to take up dancing? Like, don't.
Well, you'd have to be sort of... you'd have to really want to dance.
Oh, yes.
You see, dancing today is not a bit like it used to be. I mean, they stand apart from each other and
That's right.
Now, I like to dance in the old-fashioned way. Dance in the old-fashioned way. I mean, it's much better. I was dancing with a girl the other night. She was old-fashioned like I was. I took her in my arms, and we were dancing round, and I said, I could dance to heaven with you like this. She said, do you reverse?
Thank you, team, very much, and thank you, Fiona Page. Thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time to meet our special guest, a recording artist with a flair for comedy as well as music, that unique figure on the British entertainment scene. A warm welcome, please, for Lonnie Donegan.
Hey! Well done, Lonnie.
Great.
Welcome to the programme, Lonnie.
Thank you very much. It's very interesting. I've never been in a geriatric ward before.
All right.
Lonnie, who were you looking at when you said that?
Geriatrics a go-go. Listen carefully, because here comes the question. Lonnie.
Yes.
Your question.
The tricky question is, does the team think they don't write songs the way they used to?
Does the team think they don't write songs the way they used to?
I just said that.
I know.
Well, there's an echo. I'll bet you there's an echo here.
Well, aside from the grammatical errors, it's quite an interesting question.
Well, I don't claim the script department credits, merely the intent.
If you had to go back to research, you'd find that all the songs in the Edwardian and the Victorian eras were about food.
Food?
Or they drink.
All about food.
Or
and
drink.
There was boiled beef and carrots, boiled beef and carrots, and beer, glorious beer. They were all. And then in the 30s came the sex songs, like, I can't get over a girl like you, so get up and make the tea yourself.
There are some wonderful modern songs. Now, what about Paul McCartney's Yesterday?
Yeah.
Now, that is a beautiful song. And I'll just sing you two lines of it. Yesterday, All my jolly jokes seem bright and gay, excepting one I got from old Ted Ray. Oh, that belonged to yesterday. But I'll tell you something. Thank you.
I don't know whether you're applauding Arthur or hating me.
A little bit of both, Ted, I think.
I must tell you about Ronnie, though, going to songs. Lolly and I were in pantomime at Manchester 3 or 4 years ago.
For 2 weeks.
And our principal... It was a long run, I'll tell you that. You're too lazy to do pantomime.
Would be a long run from...
Anyway, well, I could get you in this year, but we've got the back legs of the cow.
You're dropping those remarks in very nicely.
I wouldn't otherwise.
Hello to Bull.
I wouldn't otherwise. But anyway, Lonnie and I were in, and Mary Hopkin was our principal girl. Is this right, Ronnie? She was,
yes,
Cinderella.
Lovely Mary Hopkin.
And on the last night, you know when the fella goes in, with the buttons goes in, with the crystal shoe,
oh, yeah,
on the cushion. That is the great emotional part of the pantomime. Lonnie got a Wellington boot. And he walked in, and the prince had to try on very seriously the Wellington boot on Mary, and she danced and sang some song going round with one crystal shoe and one Wellington boot. I must say it looked very funny.
I don't suppose the audience even noticed.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes, they did.
They both...
Oh, no, they did.
They, all right. They both came round and said they thoroughly enjoyed it.
Jim, have you ever written a song?
Funny you should say that.
Yes.
I was about to say to Mr. Donegan, who could be a client of mine, I have just completed a folio.
What?
Drinking songs.
Oh, folio?
We published a folio. It's called...
Were they publishing it by Boozy and Hawks?
Yeah, no. There are 9 songs, so therefore it's called One Over the Eight, you see.
Oh, that's good.
One of them is called The First Pint of the Day, for example, which is a very exhilarating thought.
Give us a chorus, Jim.
Well, can you...
Well, give us a pint.
Yes, go on. Go on, Jim.
Go on, Jim.
It's a waltz. It goes, the first pint of the day goes down smoothly all the way. It slides down my neck and I look forward to the...
Rubbish, get off!
That's about as good as that.
I'll tell you what.
That's about as good as that song that Cole Porter once wrote. And you know, we all think that he's written marvellous songs. He actually wrote a song in the 1914-80 war that goes something like this. It goes, little bit lonely, little bit blue, cleaning my rifle, and thinking of you.
That's true.
That is absolutely true.
Can I tell you what has disappeared from the scene since the music hall's closed?
The audience.
Keep it up, Ted.
Go on, Ted.
You know, some days it doesn't pay me to get up.
No, no. Well, you haven't been as bad as usual. Come on, Ted.
The audience work that out for themselves.
Comics, the comedians, as Arthur and Jimmy will tell you, and Leslie, they'll tell you because they have knowledge. Every comic had his own songs, and nobody dare use them. Before the free song, and of course a comic didn't play a theatre for maybe 12 months, and so it was always new. And this was the funniest chorus I ever heard in my life. A fella came on the stage, and he was dressed in tights, with a few leaves and a laurel wreath around his head, obviously supposed to be Adam. And this is what he sang. I'm Adam, the fella that Adam, I'm awfully partial to fruit. I hadn't got a shirt on, but kind Mr. Burton has bought me this beautiful suit. It should have been made out of fig leaves, but they hadn't got any my size. I'm now wearing holly, and though I look jolly, I'm dancing with tears in my eyes.
That's a beauty.
Ted, can I see you afterwards? I feel we might have some exchange to do.
Lonnie, what sort of songs do you most enjoy singing?
Successful ones. No, it's a terrible one. My tastes are very Catholic, if I might.
Oh, yeah, that's quite right.
Don't bring religion into it.
No, that's a good straight line. I like to sing a little bit of this, a little bit of that. You no doubt have deduced if you've seen my little offerings.
A lady in the audience says, what about the other?
Thank you, team, very much, and thank you, Lonnie Donegan.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Tremendous. And now we have a question from Mr. Michael Steadman.
An ex-lady gymnastics champion
revealed in the paper that she used to do the splits in bed with one foot under the pillow and slept quite happily like that.
Oh, God.
Have the team any favourite positions for sleeping in bed?
I used to do a routine about that.
Hang about a bit, hang about. I have to, and I'm going to enjoy repeating the question.
I'm not surprised.
An ex-lady gymnast champion revealed in the paper that she used to do the splits in bed with one foot under the pillow and slept quite happily like that. Have the team any favourite positions for sleeping in bed?
I thought for a terrible moment he'd said one foot under the fellow. But that would make more sense to me, actually. I mean, positions in bed are something, of course, which one doesn't know much about. One's usually asleep.
Well, I don't
Someone
know.
Doesn't I doesn't know what position one adopts.
This business of sleeping is a very serious question, actually.
One which, your audiences go through quite a lot.
I don't think. Isn't it a wonderful thing that a man can get a living for 40 years from people he hates? And vice versa. But I'm going to tell you that. If you buy a Japanese handkerchief, which are very scarce, they will show you all the positions in which you can sleep.
How many are there, Ted?
Well, it is a fact, a well-known medical fact, that the normal human being, and I wish I could work with three others, the normal human being moves his position or her position in bed entirely alone, at least 60 times a night.
I find the best way is sleep right on the very edge of the bed, and you soon drop off.
Well, I did do a routine once about sleeping positions.
We don't want to hear your old routines.
I do. Two football, grass widows of football, you know, husbands go off to watch the local match, and they're chatting away, and one says, how's your husband, Dad? She says, same as ever, love. Football mad. Eats, drinks, and sleeps football. Doesn't have nightmares anymore. He has cup ties. Every night we're going off to bed, I'm just getting off nicely when he sits bolt upright with his eyes shut, shouts up the Rovers, and we're off. She says, how terrible. Is it terrible? He had me out of bed 6 times last night with corner kicks. I wouldn't mind, but 5 of them were goals. And is that inconsiderate?
I'm not surprised you don't get much work.
He gets a lot of children.
This is absolutely true, actually. I've recently spent 5 different weeks in 5 different hotels. I always insist on a double bed because I'm fairly large. And I went into this room, I said, that is the biggest bed I've ever seen. I mean, that really is exciting. One could spend a voyage of hope in that bed, all alone, mark you. What I didn't know was that they put 2 single beds and lashed them together, you see. And during the night, the string broke. And here we go with this, your absolutely accurate statement about the peregrinations that one goes through during
the night. Yes, indeed, indeed.
I must have moved about during the night because gradually the beds slipped apart.
Yes.
And I fell in the well.
And woke up in a different hotel.
No, I didn't. I woke up for... I thought I was sleeping between Peggy Mountain and Laurie... Nonny... What's this?
In a bed!
What was his name, that band here that just went up?
Lonnie gone again.
Thank you, Gene, very much. And thank you, Mr. Stedman. Thank you very much. There you go. And now, team, you'll hear a question from Mr. Douglas G. Henry. Mr. Henry, your question, please.
There is a plaque in the Cotswold farmhouse saying, Jimmy Edwards once sat here. Where would other members of the team like plaques, and what activities would they commemorate?
There is a plaque in a Cotswold farmhouse saying, Jimmy Edwards once sat here. Where would other members of the team like plaques, and what activities would they commemorate?
Well, of course, what Mr. Henry has forgotten to mention is that underneath the plaque that says Jimmy Edwards once sat here, there's another plaque that says, would he kindly return the chain, please?
There is a house in Wigan that has a plaque. It's halfway up the wall, and it says, Ted Ray was born here.
What a funny place to be born, halfway up a wall.
Very good. Well, I live in a block of flats, and I suggested that the
that there ought to be a plaque for me, that Arthur Askey lived here, you see. But the landlord said it would pull down the value of the premises.
I don't know, anyway.
I must say,
I once saw a plaque in a WC in Brixton. You know those marvellous doors where there's a gap about 3 inches? Just above the gap it said, "Beware limbo dancers."
Do you know, I must say, I would like to be commemorated.
It's about time.
Incinerated.
No, incarcerated.
I said commemorated, and I use that word advisedly. It's got three M's in it. I would like to be commemorated.
Let's ask Mr. Hendry whether he can recommend any plaques for members of the team.
I'd put Jimmy down as first, really.
Oh, what a pity.
Here lies Jim of drinking fame. Edwards was his second name. If through the canopy you peer, you'll find a Jim still on the beer.
Very good.
All right, Mr. Hendry.
let's go down the panel, as it were.
To Ted Ray? Oh, yes.
What do you mean by that?
I reckon Martin's Bank in Dale Street, Ted, would have... Ted Ray keeps all his money here, earned, of course, on Wigan Pier. And every clerk behind each griddle knows that Ted is on the fiddle.
All right. Well, now, does Arthur Askey come next?
Oh, yes. Two mutual friends of ours, Arthur and I, told me that he started his career with a Liverpool corporation. And as I paid my rates there for 35 years, I think it would be rather nice to have a little plaque in the rates department there saying, "Since Askey worked here, don't be caught. Check your change. It might be short."
Thank you very much. And there, I'm afraid, we must close Does the Team Think for today. On behalf of Jimmy Edwards, Ted Ray, Arthur Askey, Leslie Crowther, and our producer, Edward Taylor, our thanks to all our questions and our special guest, Lonnie Donegan. Mrs. McDonald, hopefully, saying goodbye to you all.